basically what the aim is to add some more entries to the ADS-CFT dictionary, and in particular in this combination with flavor. And I should say right away that we are still very much at the beginning of combining the adding flavor with the application to hydrodynamics. So the model we have is we took the approach of taking a very simple model to see what's going on and to providing some techniques. So I'm going to show you experimental or a phenomenological interpretation at the end. I think that should be taken for the story. So what I'm interested in are the transport processes in the presence of flavor frames. And so, as I said, we want to add further entry in the ADS-CFT dictionary in this context. And so basically, we want to combine the calculation methods of some environments and methods with the work which has been done on ADS-CFT with flavor, which was presented by many people already this afternoon. Okay, so here's my version of the transparency, which explains the Kalkin cups scenario. And so I'll be very brief about this because it has been presented very nicely by Rob and also the other participants about. So in my case, so these remains are this black line, which goes in 0, 1, 2, 3 direction. And then there's the 4, 5, 6, 7 direction here in this direction. So we have this blue V7 probe. And on the other side of the correspondence, this brain wraps ADS5 and also an S3 inside ADS5. So the conventional ADS-CFT is these green strings. So in the conventional ADS-CFT here maps open strings to closed strings. And now there's this additional new duality due to Kalkin cups, which actually maps open strings to open strings. So now in some sense the duality acts twice. Okay, remember the probe limit. So this is the standard form of ADS-CFT, and now we have extra degrees of freedom on top of them, which are the fundamental representation of the gauge group. And in the Lewis gravity theory, these are described by the so-called GBI, Dirac von Inveit action, which describes how this brain actually fluctuates. So this is a picture which also already has been on the board a couple of times this afternoon. So this is now going to the black hole background. And Rob presented in great detail the space transition which happens here in this plot of the current condensate versus the Borg mass. And so in this case, so this is the picture due to my former student in Ingo Kirk. And so here, this is this picture which has been around already a couple of times. So here, this is the embedding coordinate perpendicular to the 7 brain. And so this is the horizon in the background in the space position is here. So now, in this talk, I want to present you an analytical calculation. So what we're going to do is to take a very simple case and to see analytically what's actually going on. And so I would like to draw your attention to the fact that in addition to the phase transitions, this plot has this interesting property that when the Borg mass goes to zero, actually also the chiral condensate goes to zero, which means that we don't have any spontaneous chiral symmetry breaks in this scenario. And this means that actually the embedding for zero Borg mass is also a solution. It's basically just the x-axis or the rho axis in this plot. Another limit in which the brains become flat is when we go very far away from the black hole, and then we basically return to the solution of Kalkin cups, and so we have this flat embedding. So in the following calculation, which was quite complicated to do and which I would like to show to you, we wanted to simplify things as much as possible, and so we are looking at the embedding, which is just basically here. So we want to switch on some temperature, so that we have to be in this region influenced by the horizon. But as you can see, for including this bending, one has to do some numeric, but really what we want to do is some analytical study. And so we just take this embedding here, which corresponds to zero Borg mass. So in some sense, this is a toy model, and later on we would like to then look at the other solutions as well. So what is the complicated calculation which we did? So what we did is to consider a probe of two coincident D7 brains. So we have two brains right on top of each other, and this means that we have an S2-gauge theory on the brain flow. And so for this scenario, we actually might define an isospin coming to potential, which in some sense is the non-Abelian generalization of the baryon chemical potential, which Rob and David have been talking about this afternoon. So what we do is we consider the time component of our gauge field, so zero times the time component, and we switch on a VAR, which is proportional to the third Pauli matrix in this way. It's very important that this ANDERS, okay, so an important point about this ANDERS, first of all, is that these views are just constants, and in this particular case, with this very simple embedding at the zero clock mass, is consistent with the equations of motion, which we obtain from the well, effect action on the brain. And so we can choose this as our toy model for probing our analytic calculations. So what we then do is to consider fluctuations about the background. So we have this isospin chemical potential in the background, and then we look at fluctuations. And these fluctuations are dual to an SU2 flavor current in the dual field theory. So this is the program of what we actually did, and I want to talk you through this. So, okay, first of all, we have to establish the action and the equation of motion of the SU2 gauge field fluctuation about this isospin background. And as I said, we do this from the obtain it from the D7 Brian action for an embedding model for management. And once we have that, the second point is to evaluate the Green functions for the flavor correlator in momentum space. And so in view of looking at transport processes, that's really what we want to do. And here in this particular case, we apply this to our SU2 current. And to actually do this calculation, we use the analytical approach of Policastro-Sot and Stalinets. We show what happens when we carry this over to this flavor case. So, and the last thing then which I'm going to show to you is to interpret this result by comparing to hydrodynamics. And I have to say, although this model looks rather innocent and we just wanted to see what happens, we actually found some very disturbing behavior in some sense. And in particular, we find that the diffusion coefficient is going to be frequency dependent, and that's certainly something we didn't expect when we started the calculation. Okay, so for looking at transport processes, it's useful to start with a Minkowski signature, and that's very easily done here, and we use the metric which also many other people showed at this conference. And I'd like to draw your attention to this function f, which determines the temperature dependence, and in our particular case, we normalize things such that it's just 1 minus u squared, which is also the metric used by So then we establish the electron interaction for this particular case. And as I said, because we have this embedding, everything is rather simple. And then we look at our background with this chemical potential. And we just keep things simple. We take this coefficient mu to be smaller than 1. And so we just keep terms which are linear in here. So this means so that our action looks like this. So this would be the Abelian contribution, but now we have this extra term which is here. Okay, so here we have 2 gauge fields, and this is this chemical potential, and the notation is just such that mu c refers to the fact that mu is an adapt for the third Pauli matrix. Let me stress again so that the probe mass is zero and the probe does not extend into the 8 and 9 directions perpendicular in this coordinate system. Okay, so now we want to calculate our flavor current correlator in this scenario. And before doing that, let me show you the method which was used by Swan and Starlets in some other context. And this is rather important because in our case, things will be drastically different at some point, and I would like to show you what's going to happen, just for to have the comparison. Okay, so they have if you have any action in 5 dimensions, which is of this form, with some metric coefficient and some fluctuations. Then some Starlets, they use the standard ABS-CFT method of the bulk boundary propagator, which in this case looks like this. And then they did this to Fourier transform to a momentum space. And what they actually showed then is that the Green function is given by this particular form. So where this function f takes an important role. Is it a different function f than before? I just realized, so don't get confused. And V is this metric coefficient here. So this is equation is now for the individual Lorentz components of this Green function. So they apply their method to the alpha parent. And so in particular, they chose a in the regular direction to be zero. And then a particular frame is chosen where just the time component in the third direction of the momentum are kept. And then they apply the method I just showed. And they obtain a Green function of this particular type, which has several important and interesting features. So first of all, so there's no flavor, so they have nc squared here. So later on, this in our case, this will reduce just to xc. This is also consistent with results of the Myers and Matthias, which were discussed beforehand. And the other important thing is the denominator of this Green function, and where this coefficient d is the so-called diffusion coefficient, and in this simple case, it just takes this simple form. So then they go on, and so this is a supergravity result. And the main feature of the approach of Sonnen's operators and their collaborators is to now compare this gravity result to hydrodynamics. Now, in hydrodynamics, if you have a Green function which touches a pole, then you know that this is the Green function for the diffusion equation, which I have written here for you. So this is one time derivative, which corresponds to this one power of the frequency. And also here, the second derivative with respect to space, which then, after Fourier transform, is momentum. So and this equation holds for the time component of the current. And together with the continuity equation, actually, this is consistent with linear response theory. And basically, the spatial components of the current are just given by the gradient of this J0, and V just appears as a constant here. So this is important. I'm talking about this because in our case, it's going to be different. OK, so then they also went on to actually do the same calculation in the presence of a R-charge chemical potential. And to do that, they look at gauge U1 supergravity. So basically, in their case, they have a U1 chemical potential, which is built into the gravity background, which is quite different from what we are doing here. And so this is a result for one of the components. Of course, they have many others, not all of them, but just for one spatial component of the Green function, they obtain the following results. So basically, their chemical potential is here encoded in this coefficient kappa. And if this kappa is absent, basically for this component, they would get something without the pole. But when the kappa is switched on, there's something which is more divergent. And it again has this diffusion pole here. OK, so now our aim is to apply this method to the SU2 TVI action with this isospin chemical potential. And so the equations of motion we find, so A1 and A2 are the directions, the 1 and 2 spatial directions. And remember that the chemical potential is pointing in the 3 direction. And so now something interesting happens. OK, first of all, I should say these Gothic letters are just notational for some dimensionless coefficients. I personally don't like Gothic font too much, but I just want to be consistent with some experiments. OK, so and basically, so this since I use the same font, the first three terms look exactly the same as the paper of Summons. So, but now, since it's not abelian, you get an extra term, and this last term is the extra term. And so now the interesting fact is that because there's a structure constant here, we are now going to mix the flavor components with each other. So these are actually coupled differential equations, which are coupled not only via the Lorentz structure, when I'm not at this, no, that's the other case. Not scotus to zero street case. But also they're going to be coupled with respect to the color structure. And that's quite complicated, so most of the work was actually to decouple these differential equations. So the decisive thing is now what you can see, so that in this term, which is already in the Solomon's variance, omega appears as the square function, so there's an omega squared here. But now here, because we basically replace, due to the nonlinear structure, we replace one time derivative with a constant, with mu. And if we do that, we lower the power of omega until there is something which is linear in omega. And that's going to have drastic effects, which we didn't expect at first. And I'm going to show to you. I should also say that these effects are very drastic, and they really don't depend on the form of this mu. So if I have a different, more complicated mu for other embeddings, this linear behavior will still be present in this equation. Okay, so these are the equations for the time and the A3 component. And here you can see, again, there's these non-Lagrangian terms, but those are also coupled with, so there's zeros and threes in both of these equations. Okay, so we have 3 × 5 component equation of motion, and they're coupled through their Lorentz and through their vector indices. So this is rather complicated, and so we have to do something to decouple this, and so we make the following ansatz. So we define quantities x, I, and x tilde I, which correspond to the off-diagonal elements if we write or get here in the polymetric spaces. Remember again that mu was here, so mu contributes here and here, and so here we have the off-diagonal components. And it turns out if we write our equations in terms of these off diagonal components, I mean if we write those equations from off-diagonal components, they are actually going to be calculated. So I'm not going to do the calculation for both sets, so I'm going to concentrate on this case here, but for this moment it works. Okay, so now in terms of these new variables, x tilde, we have the following differential equations. Oh, I'm sorry, I got confused. I do have all of them. So this is for the one and two directions, that's for the three, and that's for the time direction. And again, you can see it's almost the same as before, but now we have this term where omega appears linearly. These different signs correspond to the different x and x tilde equations. Remember how this tilde is defined because it's going to show up in a couple of times. Okay, so now we have this equations of motion which look roughly similar to what Solomon's diagrams had. So we decided to just take their approach to go and solve these equations and see what we get. And also we wanted to stick to the ansatz of their very first paper where they use an analytic approach. So we have a differential equation which has the divergence coefficients, and to actually solve this, we have to make an ansatz of this particular form, as Solomon's diagrams did. And there's these so-called indices, which are the powers of this term, which is that. So remember, this sum coefficients diverge when u becomes 1. And now that's where the drastic things start to happen. Yeah, because beta is going to look like this. Okay, so this looks quite terrible, but I wrote it in a more terrible way than it actually is to show you what the abelian limit is. So I basically, it's less singular if you multiply omega into the square root. But I wrote it in this way because it shows that if I set m or mu to 0, then we return to exactly the case which Solomon's diagrams were considering, which is the abelian case, and so we are back in the usual game. But now, of course, our idea was let's investigate what this term does. Now, since our idea was to do something analytically, if you want to continue with the whole expression, it's hopeless. That's not going to work. So we did something very drastic, and probably in the future, of course, we should check with some other methods such as how good this approximation is. And we just said, okay, let's take mu so large that we can drop this one. So that's our approximation. So So we have one beta which looks like this, and one beta which looks like that. Not that one of them is real and the other is imaginary, corresponding to the different excellent experience. So we have to have two different boundary conditions. So for the tilted one, we use the standard infolding wave boundary conditions. The wave can only go into the black hole, but they don't come out. And here in this real bit, we say that the mode should decay towards the horizon and vanish. Yeah. So once we have this alert, we can, as some stargates did, do a polynomial alert, so this F, which is there. But now, because we have the square root, we have to include the square root order in this expansion to disentangle all the orders correctly. And so that's what we do. And we insert this into the equation of motion, and then we solve in order by order in Q and omega.
But it's polynomial in U.
Sorry?
It's polynomial in U. What it has to do is polynomial.
No, no, okay. These things are, again, I mean, of course, these things are functions of U, but we expand. This is the hydrodynamic limit, so we take two and a half. So, and okay, so there's a certain amount of calculation to do. And then for the time components x tilde and the time component, we get the following result. So, as I told you first, here is only fc not nc squared. And then the denominator looks pretty complicated, if you remember what we were doing before. Nor for some reason of gate invariance, which I'm going to explain in a minute, one has to consider the sum of these two things. And then if we do that, we can see that there's a pole at this particular value. So here there's a square root. So basically, if you want to look at omega, then you have to square this and it will be 2 to the fourth. And okay, so in doing this calculation, I dropped this term, which is higher order than this one.
So square root of omega is always positive in the positive root involved.
Yeah, okay, it's subtle. We look at both positive and negative frequencies, but we do it separately.
It's understood
as a
positive.
Yeah. Okay, with one question. So omega will have imaginary part.
There will be. Let me. I'm in the middle. So,
did you consider a limit where you would keep, say, m over omega fixed?
Ah, that's a very good point. I think we have to be very careful because since we drop this abelian part, it's valued for small omega, but omega has to be smaller than mu, and also it can't be zero. So it's a very narrow range where this omega is. There's a lot to be, but I think that's a very good idea. I should check that. Yeah. Okay. Good. So now let's be even more bold and let's try to give a physical interpretation to the thing using the hydrodynamics which I know so far. And I think this is the point where I should learn more about hydrodynamics and see how you treat these higher order things. So. Then we are just very bold and rewrite our Green functions in a way that it looks roughly the same as before. But before this thing was the diffusion coefficient was a constant, and now if we do that, it will depend on omega in this particular way. So let me remind you again that I dropped the abelian part, so it will be less rough going to zero than what I'm writing here. So I think the main lesson is that we can get something which depends on the frequency. And this means that our diffusion equation is replaced by something complicated where you have a convolution. Okay, so if d is a function of omega and we take a Fourier transform, we have to take a convolution, and then we'll be non-local like this. So there's this d now looks like a memory function. Sorry?
Yeah, for a moment. Should that stop at t?
Did I make a typo? Okay, so let me plot again. So here, so this is the sum of the Green functions in the time direction. And this is one of the Green functions which points in the same direction in flavor space as the chemical potential. And so I should say here that this Green function So this is the real part and the imaginary part. And here we plot the flip-flop versus omega of FT. And that looks exactly as before. So there, here is no effect of the coming potential. But it's different if you look at the components which are perpendicular to this. And then you see, of course, the square root behavior here. So it's non-differentiable here. And also the imaginary part is non-differentiable and here at zero. So notice also the different scales here. So this is much broader. So this is a very narrow thing which is happening there. Okay, but it's important to keep in mind that this thing doesn't change. Okay, so here I have some other components just to show consistency. So these are the three direction states. They also have poles which involve this frequency-dependent omega. And then there's other directions, the one and two directions, where you have a square root behavior, but there's no pole here. And as I said, the components pointing along the idlespin flavor space, then we just get the standard. And there's no dependence on you. Okay, so what does it mean? And is there such a thing as a frequency-dependent diffusion? And so we looked around a little bit, and then we found something in the theory of quantum liquids. And so this is a plot which I took from this paper, which has nothing to do with the quantum plasma, so this is in condensed matter physics. But so this is something which was being studied in quantum liquid theory. And yes, indeed, there is something like frequency-dependent diffusion. And they calculated, yes. So as I learned from here, they use the method which is very similar to the method which we use, so that's the best thing. Okay, so here we have the frequency-dependent diffusion, and we see, okay, it goes to a finite value here. Sorry? Yeah, that's a problem. Okay, it goes to a finite value. It's a sharp rise, and then it comes back down again. Okay, so in our case, we have to be careful because there's this abelian, we drop the abelian limit. And so I think by doing that more carefully, I hope we will be able to also get something finite here to make things consistent. And so it seems to be we are kind of in this region here where there's this steep rise. Also, I hope to be able to do the calculation for all omega to see if we can get this tail or so. Okay, so at least, I think that the message to take is there is such a thing as frequency dependence diffusion. Good. Now about the interpretation, so let me just quickly say the obvious things. So we have U and D quotes in the Young-Mills plasma, and the chemical potential really is the energy which is necessary to flip the isospin at any position. And so if the diffusion is frequency dependent, it means that the relaxation of the fluctuation in the plasma is expected to be non-exponential. Okay. Now, why do we get this strange behavior?
Does it mean that either the matrix doesn't apply?
Well, I think we need some enhanced version of hydrodynamics. I would say that. Yeah. We have a memory. Yes. Okay, but let me address this question why we get this strange behavior. And I think there's relation to something which Nick presented in his talk. In fact, in this very simple system, there is some Wolf-Einstein condensation which can happen. And as we calculated in the paper there, if we put an instanton on the D7 prime within supergravity, then exactly this isospin chemical potential, which I showed to you, this constant entries, leads to an instability which is similar to Wolf-Einstein condensation. And I should emphasize that this happens even when the temperature is zero. So even in the standard ABS 5.5, if we put this background, then there's this instability. So it's not related to the present horizon.
Shouldn't there be then the zero sound that the ABS should then
Okay, that's very good. Maybe we should discuss this afterwards. Okay. Let me just finish. Okay, so let me just say very quickly again, so Nick mentioned it already. So in this scenario, there's an addition to ADS-CFT, where we identify the essential size of this expert subatomic supergravity with the Higgs vector, the dual field theory, so this quark there. And so then there's instant solutions, or these micro orders are in the 5, 4, 5, 6, 7 directions perpendicular to the sweep rank. So, and here Q is the instanton size. And then if we calculate the potential just as Link outlined in his talk, we get something with minus mu squared and q squared. So this mu squared is exactly the same mu squared as I was using for this calculation here. And so we see there is some instability hanging around here, and maybe the behavior we see is related to that in some way. Okay. So to conclude, so this is just a brief summary of what I did, but I think I've said this many times, so I just skipped through this. I should say again, so why emphasize why does this complicated behavior come about? It's just because we effectively replace time derivative by a function of the equations of motion in this extra term, and that's related to the non-abelian structure, and that leads to this frequency dependence. Okay, I should say that's the simplest possible case, and there's a very complicated order of limits which we have to take into account to be able to use this analytic ansatz. And then we have that this contribution looks like explosive. Okay, so what's the outlook? Also, clearly there's many things to do here. I mean, this is just the beginning. And so, of course, first of all, we'll try to look at more involved embeddings, and so look at the case when the fourth plus is not zero. And that in particular will imply that also the connected potential will be a function of the rate of barrier. And then also we would like to find the diffusion coefficient for all values of omega and q. But maybe the lesson one should take from this that it's generally perhaps interesting to look for frequency dependence in the gravitational description of thermal field theory. And I ordered a new hydrodynamics book, which was recommended for you. So, and it hasn't arrived. I'm going to.
Does it have a memory?
Yeah, I hope so. So, okay, so that's the status. And so, thanks very much.
Non-abelian charge, like isospin, don't you in the hydrodynamics have an extra equation which is kind of precession?
No.
You know, like non-Lipschitz equation.
This type still on the ABC should be like
a precession. I was wondering if you solved that, you get a different form of the diffusive power because, you know, there's not just continuity equation, it's also precession.
Oh, okay, that's very interesting. Okay, so I should definitely look for that.
You have the different regime when omega less than mu. Omega equal mu, this mu is a lot more.
I see, okay.
So if you have spin, yeah. A spin liquid of particle with spin in a magnetic field is very similar, should be similar to.
Yes, I see. Equation. Okay.
Spin
good, okay, I definitely look for that.
So, a comment and a question. The comment is just to emphasize what's peculiar is not frequency-dependent diffusion. It's non-analytic dependence on frequency as frequency goes to zero. And that generically has to be interpreted as saying that you're coupling to some other hydrodynamic modes that you haven't yet put into your description. But my question is now just concrete. I'm confused. Once I pick a direction in SU2 space for your isospin potential. Is your peculiar diffusion something that's affecting a charge density that's aligned with the chemical potential?
No, just only the ones which are frequent, only the perpendicular ones.
I mean, so it is the ones we should be processing. We should be all the physics of NMR and distinguishing T1 from T2.
NMR.
Okay. NMR counts as a thing, I think. When you made your large mu approximation, so you small omega approximation, could you have done the opposite approximation and made progress? Or could you have done this for small mu small for range omega?
Okay, so. Yeah, I think if we, I mean, of course, if we make mu equal to zero, then everything.
but I think
we thought about this, but okay, but I think it requires numerics again. It's not, I mean, here we had this paradigm, we wanted to do an analytic calculation, and you know, so we did everything to be in line with this. But of course, that would be a very important thing to check, and I think that that would require some numerics. But
even in the order, it's small.
Yeah, because you have two terms in this particular thing. And,
maybe you're in the microphone. Yeah, maybe this is a good question. What is paradigm?
That's a very good question, and I just know it's a substance which displays superfluidity in something. So this is quantum liquid theory. And before we were talking about
physics. I'm just trying to understand this physically.
Yeah.
So if I think not about diffusion, but about conductivity, which is proportional to the diffusion, so this means that DC conductivity is zero, which means the system is an insulator, a color insulator, something.
Okay, keep in mind this is a correction. I mean, I have thrown away the opinion part, which is still around. So you know, as I said, for zero frequency, and that's the finite bandwidth. And so, So that's another thing you want to do, but then you have to do numerics to find this.
So this is of diagonal?
It appears here in the
diagonal.
Okay, here is in the diagonal, and
tilde in
zero. There, it appears again. Okay, so just. So probably here.
But it appears
everywhere.
But it is 0 and 3 are spatial indices. And tilde is the other speed.
Yes, that's right. So yeah, sorry.
This is plus minus.
It is plus minus.
Okay, so. So you would see one correlation between A3 and.
A0 and 0.
Yeah. Yes, sorry.
I wanted to make a comment, maybe also to since Rob's talk. Actually, when you draw these pictures of sagging brains, and then there is a critical that reminds me that Cardano, Leo Cardano, was. Giving seminars which were called breaking a neck, making a splash, and he was discussing the physics of water tap. So what happens when at the point when the drop separates from the bulk of the liquid. And there is a problem there because the transition from the point where the so from this hyperboloid graph is taking to this to the separation is not analytic. It goes through some kind of similar configuration as you do. And he actually discovered, or maybe not, he didn't discover it, but he studied the cell similarity at that point. So there is some kind of sequence of discrete transitions of some sort, which you could describe using some kind of scaling theory, which describes the forming of the neck. Have you?
I think it's a similar idea. You're changing the topology. I mean, there's a similar application that's much closer to that, which, well, it goes very far from this, but for black strings, there is a transition between having a cylindrical horizon and having it pinch it off to it.
Yeah.
So that it seems that displays some kind of.
So he was saying that this sort of spiral structure can be described using this white universe. So
it's a critical exponent.
There is something on this. So I heard only the clock, so it was on the level of the right. All right, so we go to our last talk.